We went into actually into the center of Newfoundland and drove back over to the area of Stephenville, and we had no place to live. And so for the first 3 days, we had a small car, and we lived in the car on the beach. And then we would bathe every morning in the water of the North Atlantic. And I'll simply say, and you could see the ice in the water. This is an area, it snowed on July 4th there, okay, when we were up there. That was my first experience in missions. I had accepted Christ as a freshman here. I had traveled after my freshman year. And so I've traveled in a ministry team, so I was familiar with ministry. But this was the first time that I actually thought, all right, I'm going to leave the country for the express purpose of sharing the gospel. The four of us, we had absolutely no clue what we were doing. And we had the absolute time of our life. We ended up, the Lord opened up a boarding home in this little town of 12,000. And with the four of us, we all looked at one another and we said, all right, let's just use whatever giftedness we have to engage within the community. And I love sports, and so the community had a community soccer team, basketball team, and lacrosse team. And so I jumped in and I said, hey, I play all three, let's go. With four Americans in this little town, like everywhere we went, everyone stared at us, and everyone knew our name within about 2 weeks. So we couldn't go anywhere. It was a town I would define it almost like the 50s, where on Friday night, everyone would just get up and they'd walk up and down Main Street. And that was kind of like the cool thing to do. And so we would get up and we'd walk up and down Main Street. And everyone would know our names and would shout to us out of the windows. And we'd shout back to them. And from there, we just engaged with people within that culture. And I ended up playing on those three sports teams. And then from there, we started kids clubs in the back of this boarding home that we were staying in. What we didn't know is that the boarding home, our fellow individuals that were living with us, two of them were the primary drug dealers in town. And so my room was there. Right next to us are the two drug dealers in town. And then there's other individuals of various levels of notoriety within town. I'll just leave it at that. And they led us. We said, hey, can we do Sunday services in the boarding home? And they were like, yeah, that'd be great. And so we actually started Sunday services in the boarding home, started kids club. And that was Missions 101 for me. And it was so exciting. From there, I'll go from there to the last time I was overseas talking with Tabitha up front here. And it was actually 2 years ago that I was spending 6 weeks, a little over 5 weeks, in Africa. And I was teaching in Kenya and then up in Uganda and in Egypt, heading down to South Africa for a couple weeks and then was going to Zambia. And at that point in time, COVID broke out. And so I 3 weeks in Africa. I was in a village outside of the border of Mozambique in South Africa, and the embassy called and said, you need to get to Johannesburg as quickly as possible and get on the first flight out of Africa, or you may be there a year from now. And I went, yes, sir, and ended up sitting on the floor of the airport, of the Johannesburg airport, with 25,000 other people, all doing the same thing. Waiting for that next flight to get out. All right, that's kind of point A to point B of what God's done within my own life as it relates to what's going on in the world and how can we be a part of it. I'll simply say that we live in an era right now, and I'll tell you exactly what my target is. What my target is I want to communicate a need and I want to communicate a solution. All right, and I'm not going to do this inductively. I'm going to tell you what the solution is right now, okay? The solution is actually you. Right? So you're the solution. Let me define the need, and then let me define why I would define you or why I would suggest that you are the solution. All right, Dr. Pettit said this the other day as he was introducing the fact that we have zero COVID campuses or COVID cases on campus right now. Are you tired of hearing about COVID? When I was pastoring before I came here, we just put a moratorium on the word within the context of the church. It's like no one was allowed to talk about it. We're just so weary of it. Now, it's not the denial that it was there. It was just the weight that was bearing in everyone's life. At one level, we're all weary of COVID. But at another level, I'm going to simply suggest for us this afternoon that COVID has opened up the world in a way within the last 18 months that creates opportunities for this generation to impact the world to a greater extent than anything within the last 50 years. And I would almost date it all the way back to post-World War II, which was really the last generation that embraced what God is doing in the world today and went. All right, now, why do I say that? Because within the last 18 months, and the numbers have not come in, and certainly it's going to take some time for us to define this from an empirical perspective, but I can speak directly to particular countries. And in general, no less than one-third of missionaries have actually left the field and come back. And statistics, and this is across the board against around broad evangelicalism, just those that preach the gospel, some are suggesting that somewhere in the realm of 50 to 60% of missionaries have left the field and are actually now back in the United States. And the reasons are multitude. Obviously, COVID having a large bearing on that, and the safety as it relates to family, the recognition that some countries have actually leveraged this as an opportunity to expel those that are gospel sharers. And it's not just gospel sharers. Right? And I used the term missionary there, but I want to be very clear in the way that I communicate this afternoon. Let me define terms for a moment here. I believe that a missionary is a specific individual whom the church has authorized to be an ambassador for Christ and to be engaged in local church ministry in a cross-cultural context. Okay, so I am using the term missionary in what I'll define as a technical theological sense. All right, so it is an individual whom the church, the concept of a missionary is one who has been sent out. So there has to be an authorizing agency. There has to be someone. And they're sent out with a mission to accomplish a task at that point in time. So some are familiar with the term, and you see this when you leave churches, sometimes a little sign above the door that says you are now entering your mission field, or you're familiar with the term, everyone's a missionary. I'm not denying the spirit of that. What I mean by that is all of us should be engaged as being gospel witnesses no matter where we are. It doesn't matter. But missionary is a very technical term as it relates to the task that someone is given and the responsibility that they have and the accountability that they have. So I would not be one that would endorse the phrase, everyone is a missionary. So as I talk this afternoon, my goal is not to focus specifically on the what I'll define as the narrow field of being a quote-unquote missionary. We're at a liberal arts college. Many of you have, being a missionary, you've thought through it, you've prayed through it, and the reality is you go, that's not really what God has for me. My response to that is fantastic. Praise the Lord. Because what is actually happening in the world right now is more open for those who do not have that narrow sense of calling. Now, both are needed, and we'll talk about that. But I want to make sure that as we have this discussion, we're talking in the broadest sense of what God is doing in the world. All right, so the problem is that there is a tremendous need and a tremendous opportunity from a global perspective right now. The solution, I think, quite honestly, is you. And let me kind of walk through what I mean by that and what that looks like. All right, the question we're addressing is simply this. What is God doing in the world today? Hey, what's he doing in the world today? And then the response to that is simply, how can I make a difference? And the specific thesis or question that we're addressing in this section, this session is this. How do we connect the staggering potential of this generation with the significant needs of the world for the cause of Christ? How do we connect you to them? Because I'm simply going to suggest that from a generational perspective, that this generation has the greatest level of potential that we have seen in decades. Now, I'm not one that necessarily, I'm uncomfortable at times with the delineation of generations as it relates to baby boomers and Gen X, et cetera. But I do think that generations have particular characteristics with recognizing that you can't just stereotype everyone within that generation. Don't you hate it when someone stands up and says, all right, everyone in Gen X is irresponsible, or they're all selfish. And you're sitting there going, really? I don't think so. And my response to that is, I don't think so either. All right, so we're not talking about these broad brush generalizations. But there are particular characteristics of a generation that relate to opportunities. And that's really what I want to focus on as we speak in terms of potential. So what are the potentials that we're talking about? I'll simply begin by saying this, that this generation has an absolute eagerness to stand out. And again, a lot of this material I'm bringing from other sources, so if you'll allow me just to quote, Generation X is more focused on innovation and on uniqueness. This generation, and I've had the opportunity, even as Dr. Oberlin said, to interact with college students and to interact with college students not just within the United States, but from a global perspective. And I'll make a couple of comments here. Number one is that this generation wants to make a significant difference, and they're willing to stand out and do it. They're willing to be unique. They're willing to have an entrepreneurial spirit. They're willing, I mean, how many of you enjoy watching Shark Tank? Anyone watch Shark Tank? Yeah, but, you know, two-thirds of the people. What's Shark Tank all about? It's about individuals going, I want to make a difference. I want to do something different. I'm willing to take a risk. All right, why is that show absolutely blown up in the last 15 years? It's blown up because people are watching it going, I would love to be on Shark Tank. I have an idea. I bet I could do something like that. So there is this creative opportunity and this creative drive and this willingness to be absolutely different. Again, I see some individuals that have had me for classes, so you're kind of accustomed to this. If you've not had me for a class, I just kind of talk. And sometimes, if I can phrase it this way, without filters, appropriate biblical filters, but beyond that. All right, so let me talk right now for a moment without filters. My first year at BJ, you know what I love? Overstatement, okay, I'm going to make an overstatement. When I was a student at BJ, everyone kind of looked the same. I opened up my yearbook. We all looked the same. Guess what? You guys don't. I like that. You know, I walk on campus and I look around and I see individuals, period. I don't see, there are groups, there's friends, obviously, but I see individuals. Individuals that are willing to go, this is who I am. Now, as long as that fits within the construct, all right, of biblical obedience, that is something that can be leveraged, obviously, for good. That's an eagerness, and that's an innovation. And I'm going to suggest that it can actually lead to a courage that someone is willing to say, I will stand out for the sake of doing something more important than myself. So all of that energy obviously has to be directed. Second, I simply say this. This generation is more demanding. Right, what I mean by that, it's not a bad thing, by the way. Okay? When I think of Gen X, the first thing that comes to mind is change. Right? Every generation always desires change. They always evaluate their predecessors, and they're quick to point out the weaknesses of their predecessors, and they have a desire to incorporate strengths. And you know what? That's good. Because every generation has weaknesses, and every generation should be supplementing that, standing on the next generation's shoulders and getting better. So that's the goal. What this generation does is they leverage technology to make change happen with absolute speed and efficiency. So what used to take maybe 7 to 10 years to change, this generation says, you got 7 months, or at times 7 days. Sometimes 7 hours. It's change. It's got to happen. And we want it to happen quickly. Again, I view that actually as a positive. If it's directed the right direction. All right. Third thing I simply say this, is this generation as a whole is after experience. The experiences that I have define me. Now again, we would never want experiences to be the only thing that would define us. But at the same time, this generation is more likely, and just the numbers are out there, and I could pull out all kinds of demographic numbers. This generation, if they have $1,000 and they have a choice of going on a trip or buying something for themselves, right? Which way are they going to lean? Right. Every number out there would suggest they're getting on the trip. They are not consumer. We all have elements of being consumeristic, but generally speaking, we are consumers of experiences, not consumers of products. It is, give me the opportunity to go experience something. Give me the opportunity to go do something. Again, from a broad sense, as it relates to overseas experience, even as Dr. Oberlin said, I've done short-term trips. I've taken thousands of students overseas. Right, short-term missions has absolutely exploded in the last 20 years. Why? Well, one, there's a lot easier to travel overseas. But the other reason is a lot of people want to do it. Right, they have a desire to go and experience another culture. And then the other aspect of this, and I'll bring it in at this point, is when you go overseas, and I've done close to 50 trips overseas to and I'm on tape right now, so I want to be careful, to a restricted access country. And I've taken students over to that context. And what they find is this, is a college student from the United States and a college student from a large country in Asia, when those two college students sit down and start talking, they have so many things in common. They watch the same shows, they go to the same internet sites, they listen to the same music, they have the same experiences, and they go. Now, they're distinctly different cultures, but there's a lot more commonality than it used to be, right? And that commonality, part of it is because those experiences now, it's much easier to interact with one another, right? Next thing I'd say is simply this, is this cause-oriented. Gen X desires to make an absolute difference in the world. And you guys see it. You see it all the time. There's millions of dollars right now being spent by individuals that want to make sure that plastic straws don't end up in the ocean, right? Because we don't want them stuck in the mouths of sharks. Okay, right, wrong, or otherwise, right? There's a lot of people that give a lot of time for that. Do you realize the number one cause right now in Gen X, where the most money is being spent, is actually in the area of animal rights? Again, now we can think through that theologically. That would be a fun discussion to think through theologically. But I'll simply say, everyone has a cause. You go to a store and you give to a cause, not just to buy a product. And there's one cause after another cause after another cause after another cause. Why? Because it doesn't matter whether one is a believer or whether one is an unbeliever. They want their life to count for something. And if that something is no more plastic bottles in the ocean, that's something. But I want to live for something larger than myself. And then finally, I've already hinted at this, but I'll just state it. This generation is more global than certainly any generation that's preceded it. Gen X have more in common with their global peers than any previous generation. The technology makes it easy for engagement and for interaction. I'll just ask a question real quick here. How many of you have been out of the country? Raise your hand. Look at that. I don't want to overstate this, but 20 years ago, it would have been half that many. 40 years ago, the only individuals that would have raised their hands would have been those that have served in the military. Yep. Uncle Sam sent me somewhere. All right. Over half of you, two-thirds of you, said, yeah, I've been out of the country. It's not uncommon. So when, you know, some people ask, you know, so how many countries have I been to? I've been to lots. But it's not unusual for someone to come to me and say, you know, I've been to a lot too. It's not unique anymore at that point in time. So when I look at Gen X, Gen Z, your generation, what I'm looking at is a generation that has absolutely phenomenal potential. You have the capacity to change the world, and that sounds so, it can sound so commercialistic, and that's not my goal, because we're going to talk about NEEGS here in a moment. But you literally have the opportunity to change the world. And the world is right at your fingertips. And right now, the world is about ready to open up for you. Okay, now, let me go back to what I said earlier. 50% of missionaries, roughly speaking, have left the field because of COVID. We're not sure how many of those are going to go back. Certainly some will, some won't. The result of that is going to be positions that are opening all over the world for your generation to fill. And again, when I say positions, I'm not speaking merely in terms of missionaries. I'm speaking in terms of businesses. I'm speaking in terms of education. The Department of Education and the School of Education is going to be having their Christian school fair or their job career fair. But right after that, they're doing an international Christian school fair. Right. I've worked with multiple international schools. As a matter of fact, I was Skyping with the headmaster the other day of a large school in Asia, and he just simply looked at me and said, "Brian, I could take about 15 of your graduates and I could employ them instantaneously next year." Instantaneously. I'll build on that just for a moment. You know what that would mean? That would mean this, is they pay for all of your transportation, okay? They pay for all of your housing. They pay for half of your food, and your salary is around $35,000, which most of that you do nothing with because it's really cheap to live there. Right? You do 2 years there, you could pay off your school bill, and then you got the rest of your life to decide whatever. Right? Education majors, what's going on in the world today, and how can I get involved in it? You can take a position in an international Christian school, and you can make a difference for the cause of Christ in your field. International business right now, those of you that are in business classes, you know this, that the openings are absolutely through the roof right now. The opportunities to find, and again, families are saying, because of COVID, we're going to bring our whole family home and stay in the United States. So what they're looking for is they're looking for singles and young couples to go take international positions because they're mobile, right? They're less expensive to get there. And they're capable, and they can connect with their national peers faster than those of us with gray hair. And so you are like the absolute perfect candidate for international vocational positions all around. And right now those positions are opening at the speed of light because everyone else has come home. So that's the opportunity. All right? That's the potential. All right? What's the need? And how do we meet those needs? What I'm going to walk through is I'm going to walk through a series of numbers. And numbers at times can just become overwhelming. And so occasionally I'll just stop and I'll see if I can add a weight to the numbers or personality to the numbers just a little bit. One of the things that's really striking, I'll just take a look at the map for a moment and I'll explain it. World population. But what I want you to note is actually the distinctions as far as colors are concerned. Right. Well, this is the median age. Right. The darker the color, the younger the plant or the area. Right. Let me ask a simple question just based upon that. What's the fastest growing continent by way of population in the world today? Realizing Africa in your lifetime in 2050 it will be the most populous country in the world. It will become the global powerhouse as it relates to economies. Right, that's why China right now is investing so much in Africa. Right, they have massive programs right now where they're sending everything to Africa because they recognize in advance what Africa is going to be. And Africa is going to be where all the people live, and that is where all the consumerism is going to end up in the future. Now, certainly, China is actually shrinking in numbers. India is actually shrinking in numbers at some level. Europe, significantly, right? And North America, significantly. Right, so if I'm purely a business major or if I'm an educator or if I'm thinking about my future, I'm thinking about something right here. And I'm saying, that's where the future is in my lifetime. Right, how can I go and how can I be a part of that? So that's just purely from a number perspective. beyond just the numbers. Let's take it to the next level. Where do I need to go to actually have that kind of impact? So again, what is God doing in the world today? What's happening right now is what's defined as urbanization. Right, globalization is the recognition that, in simple terms, the earth is becoming flat, to use Thomas Friedman's terminology. Right, that there's less and less diversity around the world, and everything is flattening out at that point. But people are now moving into the city. When you look at urbanization, this is just numbers from those that are moving into cities. And when you look at the numbers that are moving into cities, look at the significant number in Africa. Everyone's moving into the cities. Asia. You go into a country like China, and right now there are 143 cities in China that have a population of over 1 million or larger. It's just phenomenal. And the number of people that are just moving into all the cities. Obviously, Europe is already there. Latin America is there. And North America is there. And that's the movement from 1950 to 2020. So these statistics are relatively fresh at that point in time. Now, I love to have this dialogue right now. It's not necessarily our purpose. But what are the advantages from a Christian perspective of urbanization? Right, just think about that for a moment. You go into a Shaoxu in an Asian country, which is a large apartment complex, and in that single apartment complex, within a quarter mile, you've got 100,000 people. And you're all shopping at the same location. You're all engaging with one another. So, I mean, your entire evangelistic opportunities are all within a quarter mile right there. All right, that's urbanization. Everyone coming together. Ideas spread quickly in urban context. Churches have to look differently in urban context, by the way. You can't go out and buy 10 acres and set up the big church. You have to think much more creatively. You have to get small at that point in time. You have to be mobile. You have to be agile. That's all what you guys are good at. You're good at being creative. You're good at being small. You're good at being agile. You're good at thinking outside the box. All right, so from a number perspective, you should be thinking Africa. All right, you should be thinking Asia, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. From a location perspective, you should be thinking city. Oh, which, by the way, sounds strangely like what Paul did. Paul went to the cities and then allowed the gospel to work itself out from there. When we talk about unreached people groups, and again, that's a term that I think most of you are familiar with. Unreached simply means this. It means that less than 2% of the population has any level of identity with Christianity. Any identity. Which means that 98% of the population has zero identity with Christianity. There are 2.9 billion, and again, this is where numbers just kind of blow our mind, and I get that. But 2.9 billion unreached people. And most of them live in this area called the 1040 window. And the 1040 window deals with longitudinal lines, and it basically includes the area from the tip of Africa here going all the way into Indonesia and beyond the Asiatic area. Right, that's where people have almost zero access to the gospel. Right, so keep putting the slides together for a moment here. You've got Africa growing in 2050. You have cities growing significantly. Now we have 3 billion people with no access to the gospel right here. Now, what I'd love for you to be doing is start thinking in terms of, hey, this is what I'm good at. I'm good at business. I'm good at technology. I'm good at education. And start thinking, so how can I take my skill set and do something like that? For me, in Newfoundland, it was kind of simple. I play soccer. So I take my skill set, I go into the community, and I play soccer. That's where God put me strategically, sovereignly for that summer. Right, what you can think about is, where does God want you strategically and sovereignly, with your skill set, whatever it happens to be, in this arena of the world? Now, let's get even more specific at this point in time. Fastest growing countries in the last 20 years. All right, Qatar, look at that number. It has grown by 342%. UAE, Kuwait, Bahrain, Western Sahara, Niger, Oman, Liberia, Chad, Lebanon. Look at the percent of growth. Can you imagine an area that has grown, doubled in size in a period of 20 years, much less tripled in size? Right, now, the question at the bottom is one we have to think about. Now we're narrowing it down beyond numbers and beyond location. Now we're going to start talking a little bit about religion. How many have Islam as the primary religion of those top 10? I'll let you look at it quickly. Want to make a guess? Nine. You want to guess which one doesn't? Yeah, Liberia doesn't. Right? So Liberia would be the one that doesn't. Right? Now we're narrowing this down even closer. Because our question is, what is God doing in the world today, and then how can I be involved? All right, we're talking geography. We're talking cities. We're talking countries. And now we're starting to narrow it down to religion. Now, the minute I put this slide up, this is actually where people get a little nervous. Because they go, all right, I was good with just about everything until you said Muslim. And the minute you said Muslim and the minute you said Islam, all of a sudden, I'm really nervous. I can't do that. One, you can. All right, just in simple terms, you really can do it. I spent 7 summers in the country of Turkey, which is 99% Islamic. And in that area, you can go, you can build friends with your neighbors, and those friends love to sit down and love to talk about who God is, who Allah is, and they love to have that level of engagement. Is it easy evangelism? No. But is it enjoyable to see what God does? Absolutely. And can God do something there? You bet he can. At the fastest, the largest Islamic country in the world is what? Population-wise. A lot of, you know, we always think like Saudi Arabia. It's actually Indonesia. And what God is doing right now in Indonesia is absolutely through the roof. Go talk to Dr. Reddick. The number of Muslims that are accepting Christ in Indonesia, what God is doing is just, and you know who he's doing it through? Doing it through businessmen and educators and simple people that are in that country. Because you can't go there as a missionary, as a formal missionary. But you can go there in multiple other ways. And Indonesia is absolutely crying out right now for international business. And they're crying out for education. So that's what we're thinking. All right. So how can we get involved? Well, we can get involved by, again, utilizing our skill set where the greatest need is. All right. Let's narrow it down even further. Frontier people groups, right? Frontier people groups are the people who have almost zero access to the gospel. And again, I'm not going to go through all the numbers, but what we're looking at is the number of religions here that have no access to the gospel. By count, 45% are Muslim, 40% are Hindu, 9% are ethnic religions, 5% are Buddhist. All right, by population, 55% Muslim, 43% Hindu. 98% of people in frontier people groups are either Muslim or Hindus. So the question is simply this: would you be willing to take your skill set and to go to an area that is dominantly Muslim or Hindu and allow God to plant you there and utilize you as a light to a very dark world? That's the opportunity. From a geographical perspective, that was from a religious perspective. If we take those same concepts and we put it in a geographical perspective, what we're looking at is 72% of the population of frontier people groups. And frontier people groups, again, are those which have almost no access to the gospel. 1.3 billion are in South Asia. South Asia consists of only 8 countries, and most of this population is in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. And now we're narrowing it down even more closely. 10% in Central Asia, 10% in the Middle East, 5% in East Asia. And if you look at all the numbers, it's just absolutely amazing. How would you like to go into a town where there are like zero Christians and you're the only one? Let me rephrase that. Don't go alone. Take a team. Okay. So you take a team. Let's do this. Let's do this the old-fashioned way. When I say the old-fashioned way, are you familiar with who the Moravians were? Right. Moravians were a group of missionaries that started in a little area called Herrnhut, which was in northern Germany. And they had a desire to actually share the gospel with a land that had almost zero Christians in it. And that land was called North America. Ultimately, it became like the United States. And so what they did is they got teams together of three groups of people were in the team. One individual had theological education and was the quote-unquote pastor of the group. One individual had a particular skill set. And the skill set that they primarily utilized was furniture making and wood crafts. And then one individual had an education major, in essence, or was the teacher. So that when the three of them went together, you had one that could teach everyone, one that could lead everyone theologically and from a pastoral perspective, and one that could actually work and make money and have a skill set so that they could get established. That's how the Moravians did missions. And where they went primarily was an area called North Carolina. By the way, where's the best furniture in the world made right now? North Carolina. Why? It's all Moravian influence. Right, the Moravians went in and they built good furniture and they got established. And then they set up education. And then from there they set up churches. But before they ever got there, there was nothing for the sake of the gospel. Right, so when I look at this, you know, there's always that moment of nervousness where you go to a place like this. And then I look at what the Moravians did and I went, yeah, exactly. With far less support and with far greater courage, right, they changed the world because they knew what God was doing and they were willing to step out for the cause of Christ. Right, so that's what God's doing in the world at those big numbers. Limited gospel presence. Right, everything that you see in the red, there's almost no gospel presence. Again, we call that the 1040 window. When you look at everything in that red area there, don't have to be a missionary. Don't have to stay for life. Just be a part of a team. Use your skill set. Go at that point in time. Which, by the way, I'll just add one other thing. The other beauty of what COVID has done is it has allowed a lot of people to work out of their homes for life. Let me just say this, man. If I had an opportunity to work out of my home for life, and if you had that opportunity, if you had a blank sheet of paper, God said, all right, you can work out of your home for life. Where would you like to go? Write it down on a blank sheet of paper. Just stop and think about that for a moment. We're going to just play this game. All right, what country would you go to? If you had the opportunity to go anywhere you wanted to and work the job that you desire to work. Think for a moment. I'm okay if you say the United States, but I'll ask the question. How many of you would stay in the United States if you had a chance to go any place you wanted to in the world? Okay, how many of you would go to Europe, South America, Africa, Asia, Antarctica? Right. It's like penguins. Oceania, which would be Australia and the whole Oceania region. Yeah, I don't want to leave that out because it's absolutely beautiful in DD also. There were like maybe 10 of you that said you'd stay in the United States. Which, you know, at this point in time, what I'd like to do is I'd actually like you to write it on paper, sign it in blood, okay? And just basically, you know, make a covenant before God that you'll never, nah. Allow God to do whatever he wants, but I'll simply say this, and I'll say this toward the end. Keep that dream, keep that desire both alive within your head and pray through it within your heart. We need to get to practical things here. All right, how many missionaries work among these? Less than 1 in 10. So 90% of the missionary force works outside of the 1040 window. The need is phenomenal at that point in time. We could talk about limited access countries. Right, these are the countries that you can't get into if you're a missionary. Some call them restricted access. Some call them limited access. A lot of people call them creative access because the way that you have to get into them is by being creative. You have to have a company that you're forming. You have to do something that allows you to get in for the sake of the gospel. And again, this is where you can do things that others can't do. How many of the remaining 7,400 underage people groups live in restricted access countries? 5 out of 6. This is, again, what is God doing in the world today? He is creating opportunities for this generation to be creative in their gospel witness. I won't spend a lot of time here because I want to get into action steps. But 50 of the largest unreached people groups, this is where they are, in these areas. Northern Africa, obviously the entire Indian subcontinent, all across Asia. Down here is where Indonesia is. Malaysia, you can get into Malaysia for the sake of the gospel. But when you get into Malaysia, the Malaysian government says you can share the gospel with the Chinese, but you can't do it with the Muslims. You know what? If they let me in, I'm good with that. There's creative ways of making it work at that point in time. By the way, does anyone know what Coca-Cola's mission statement is? They actually created this back in 1950. They don't talk about it a lot now, but it's still within their corporate documents. Does anyone know what their mission statement is? It's like super cool. A can of Coke in the hand of every person on the planet. That's their mission statement. Now, here's my question. Have they accomplished it? I can simply say this. I can't verify whether they've accomplished it or not. But I can say that I've been in 50 different countries. And in those 50 different countries, I've never been in a country and I've never been in a location where I couldn't get a Coke. Now, some of them are super warm, really warm. But you can get a Coke anywhere. That's actually in Thailand. And the simple question is this, is if they can do that with Coke, can't we do that with the gospel? Can't we do that? If nothing else, go work for Coke and say, what's your next country, Coke? I'll lead the charge. And you have a Coke in one hand and a Bible in the other as you go. Okay, potential. And here's the potential meets the need. And what I mean by that is simply this is, you're the potential, you can meet the need. When I look at the need, it looks massive. But God used 12 to turn the world upside down. And they were fishermen and accountants who were passionate about a message. And so I'm absolute confident. With absolute confidence, I know that God can meet it. So what's it take? I'll go through this just ever so quickly. I've already used this word a lot, but I think it plays right into who you are. Creativity. Many nations do not allow vocational missionaries within their boundaries. What's it going to take to meet the need? It's going to take a lot of creativity. It's going to take courage. Again, that's why when we talk about Muslims and Hindus and we talk about in Asia and Africa, yeah, it might bring a few jitters to your soul, but the excitement is far greater and God can provide courage. It's going to take international partnerships. And this is where we work with believers from other countries. This is you don't have to create the wheel all over again. You go into Indonesia, and there are Indonesian churches. You go into Malaysia, and there are wonderful Malay believers. You go into India, and it's a well-established group of Indian believers that are there. You go into restricted access countries, and many of them, you will find either a small group of believers in the country or the surrounding countries have believers that have a desire to reach that people group. So we don't go in as the Americans that go, all right, here I am, I'm the Lone Ranger, I'm here to be your savior. You go in and you say, how can I partner with you? All right, what strengths do you bring? What strengths can I bring? And then how together can we move this forward for the sake of the gospel? And I'll simply say those international partnerships and friendships are some of the sweetest that you'll ever have. Ultimately, what it takes is it takes people. regardless of the challenge, God still desires individuals to go. And the reason I point that out is this, is some people respond to this by saying, well, I'll just get on the internet and I'll set up a blog site and I'll share the gospel with people via blog. I'll have a YouTube channel. And you know what? If that's the skill set you have and that's what you can leverage for the sake of the gospel, go for it. No problem with that at all. But ultimately, the Great Commission is about people going someplace. And you have to incarnate it. It has to be fleshed out in front of people. And again, we're not talking about just quote-unquote missionaries. We're talking about those that are willing to be gospel partners. So how do you do it? I just say five things quickly. Number one, stay engaged. Stay engaged with unbelievers. In pastoral ministry, our rule amongst our staff was simply this, is every pastor had to have five meaningful relationships with unsaved people. Constantly. And they weren't gospel targets, meaning it wasn't someone that you shared the gospel with, and if they said no, you kind of checked that box and went on to the next one. Right, these were people that were friends. Because when you stay engaged with unbelievers, just as at a friendship level, and yes, you're sharing the gospel with them, but whether they accept it or not, you still remain friends with them. And as you stay engaged with unbelievers, that will actually prepare for whatever God has next from a global perspective. Stay informed, know what's going on in the world. And again, I know college students, they're so focused naturally and understandably upon the world that they live. But I mean, what's happening in Ukraine right now is significant. Right? It's massive. It's the biggest thing since World War II. And who's going to make the next move? We should be involved in that. We should at least be informed on what's happening there. Because it has an impact as it relates to gospel progress. As I say, stay involved at a local church level. Make hard choices. Make decisions that are based upon a principled plan, not on safety. Be willing to take risk. All right, and I'll simply say again, this generation, generally speaking, is willing to take risk. And the last thing I say is simply this, keep a shallow anchor. Always be willing to sail away to wherever God wants you to be. Never plant your anchor so deep where you simply say, well, God, this is where I'm going to be, and this is where I'm going to be for life. He may have you stay in Greenville, South Carolina, for the rest of your life. And no, that wouldn't be purgatory. Now, some of you are like, your looks on your faces are like, oh, yes, it would. No, it wouldn't be, because this is a place where you can be a gospel light and witness. So if this is where God has you, embrace it, rejoice in it. At the same time, don't tell God what he has to do. Just keep a shallow anchor, keep the sail up, and investigate. Education, look at international education. Business, look at international business. Internet, look at all the things that you can do from a global perspective. And just say, God, here I am. How can I make a difference in the world? So what's God doing in the world? That's what he's doing in the world. How do we respond to it? That's what you guys get to choose to do. Right, that's big picture. My goal was to answer no questions, but hopefully stir up in your heart something that God can use. So if he can take the straw, and if the Spirit can turn it in, can spin it into gold in your life, that would be a good thing. Be a good thing. All right, thanks so much. Have a great afternoon.